Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Naked Englishman, a podcast of behind the scenes of the life of an individual who has been walking on this planet, if it is a planet, for a certain amount of time. And I am looking out this morning at whatever the time is, and I'll get to that in a moment. Thursday and Friday. Oh, yeah. Good. It is the date today. It's the 13th. It's the 13th today, my little friends. It's the 13th. If there is anybody Irish out there, I do apologise. It is the 13th of May. I go into the kitchen and have a look at the time. You may. Oh, good. It is 10 past 7 in the morning.
Morning.
Morning. And it is warm-ish and overcast. But I think it may even clear up and we get a little bit of sunshine. But you never know. I can't see into the sky. Well, I can see a little bit there, but there is not the crisscross of chemtrails. So my mood is high, as they say. My mood. How is your mood? Is your mood high? I've been working very hard on my book, on my Biggleswick book. It doesn't seem like it. It does not seem like it when you see the progress, but I have been working hard. And I'm also working hard on a second book, which at the moment is called A Smoke in the Woods. But it might be, I don't know, it might be a series of short stories. How many there would be, I don't know. But there might be a number of short stories, one of them called A Smoke in the Woods. Maybe. I don't know. I cannot tell you. I cannot begin to tell you. I might even, well, I'm tempted to read a little bit, you know, tempted to read a little bit of the new book. But it is only first draft. But maybe I will do that another day. Just turning the internet on. Otherwise, I've got to sit at the computer, you see, and read first thing. I'm going to record some so you can hear it. And then it'd be better that way. And I struggle with reading off the computer, you see. Maybe on the laptop would be easier.
Yes, maybe.
Anyway, let's just deal with what happened yesterday. Oh, my goodness. What happened yesterday? Not very much. It was a bit overcast and colder, and I had to, instead of wearing shorts, which I'm wearing today, I'm wearing trousers. So that was a major thing. Just trying to think if the sun came out at all. I think it did come out in the afternoon, and I did take a stroll down, but it wasn't brilliantly warm. I have not looked back at those books by Richard Jefferies. I was just so disappointed by the way that they've been presented. One in tiny, sort of almost like a little pamphlet, a series of pages, in the tiniest font you'd ever see. And the other one was on A4. Isn't A4 a strange format to read as a book? Unless it's a hardback book. And it's, I don't know, it's got a few pictures in it or whatever. But when it's A4 and it's just printed across the whole page, it's just a weird format, I suppose, in terms of a book. I mean, a book is usually, I don't know what it is, it's usually about 8 inches by 6, isn't it? That's a sort of an average size book, 8 inches by 6 or possibly 7 by 5, something like that. It's a nice, handy size with a font size of, say, the smallest you want is about 10 point, maybe 11 is a good size. But not to put it down to something like 6, whatever it was. That was just blindingly small for a book. And then I struggled to get into it. So there you are. That is a shame. What else has been going on? I mean, I basically was working on that, worked on another book. I had an interview last night with a bunch of people who are Christians. They, I think I'm going to sneeze again. I haven't got a hanky to hand. Uh-oh, here we go, in search of a hanky. Yes, they were a Christian organisation, a group that gets together. They're awake. They are awake. And, of course, for them, because they are Bible followers and Christian, have the faith, follow Jesus, etc., they believe that that Jesus is the answer and all of this, which I'm not saying it isn't. And they were open to my perspective, just as I was open to their perspective. I think they thought that I was in the same faith. And while I think there's a huge amount of crossover in really what belief is, it's just perhaps I don't have the same iconography that they use. I mean, I guess they pray in their way and focus on the Lord's voice, I suppose. And I suppose I will sit in silence and focus on what could be my inner voice, my higher self, the source, the creator, the universe. You know, it's the same sort of thing, really, just all different things. And I don't think ultimately we have an argument. Love thy neighbour is a good way to live your life, is it not? So it was an interesting chat, let's say that. And so they were awake. They knew about the pyramid of the dark forces and pulling the strings and all the crap that goes with it all. I'm sorry, I'm charging about the house a bit, just sorting a few things out. Anyway, that was fascinating. That was interesting. I mean, I suppose now it's very difficult when you're talking to people who really think that everything that I say is a bunch of nonsense. Is that there's so many people now. You know, in the past, the conspiracy theorists were so tiny numbers and everything they said seemed to be very extreme. But now the numbers are so huge that it must be difficult for those people who've got their heads buried in the sand going, no, there's no such thing, there's no, definitely no thing here. It must be hard for them now because they must look and go, why do so many people seem to believe such and such and such and such? Well, soon the people who are thinking that we're all mad will be actually in the minority, as a greater number of people will have woken up and they'll be going, I don't understand it. I must be the only one that thinks that the government are all right and that this, you know, that the jabs were good for you. There has got to be fewer people who do not believe what's been going on. But then at the same time, people will go, oh, yes, well, I can understand that the jabs were bad. Right. OK. I can understand that. Yeah. But I don't believe in chemtrails and I don't believe in this, that and the other. And you go, OK, give it time. Give it time. Because at one time you thought the jabs were good and you were persuading people to take the jabs. But give it time. You will eventually find yourselves in the same position. And they go, no, I won't. And then, sure enough, they find themselves in the same position. That's my thoughts, anyway. Because I think there's too many people now who are beginning to see what is going on. I did think I would read something to you. I'm looking at my book. Not my work, but somebody else's work. Just for a bit of fun. And I do enjoy looking at these old books. So I think we've read bits from that one. I'm just looking here. Maybe I like the old books. Well, you know that, I just said it. I need to take that upstairs. I've also got to try and think of a I thought I did have a idea for my monologue this morning, but it is eluding me. Let's put that up there. Oh, I've still bruised. I think I've actually hurt my rib cage. I told you the other day, I think, that Billy came in. It was about nearly 3 weeks ago. Billy came in and he said, I want to borrow your drill and your jigsaw. And I had to clamber over some boxes in the middle room because I have used that as a sort of storeroom. And in reaching over and lifting up a box to get to something, I seem to have pulled something. I thought just pulled a muscle, but maybe I've just fractured, or I don't know what else would be a what's smaller than the fracture. Obviously, I haven't broken a rib, but I have done something, the bruising, or I've damaged something. And it still hurts. It comes in fits and starts. Excuse me. Right. Let's just read something for a bit of something to do. And this is from a book called... Hang on, I'm just trying to find the beginning of a... Ah. Let's do chapter 5. This is a book called Travel in England by Thomas Burke. Great name. It's got some lovely old pictures of the travelling days in it. And this was published around 1940-something, I reckon. He wrote some other interesting books: English Nightlife, The Streets of London, The English Townsman, Batsford Books. This was published, yes, originally in 1942, although this edition is 1949. The Age of Steam, The Hoots and the Jibes and the Execrations, is that right? Execrations. What does that say, Julia? I'm just being a bit dumb.
Yeah, execrations. Never heard the word before.
The hoots and jibes and execrations with which the Middle Ages and the elderly greeted the new tea kettle and the potato can travel are a familiar feature of our social history. They prophesied this and that about it, and they were very much out in their prophecies. But there were no more out than those of the opposite side, those who not only welcomed the new method, but saw in it the promise of a fair new world. The attitude of the pro-railway group was rather that of our BBC when it launched the radio upon the world, really, and adopted the motto, which now brings a heartache and an acid smile, When every night the world's air throbs with hate, and radio is as potent a weapon as of war as is the gun, one has to smile so that one may not weep when one remembers that it was launched with the motto, "Nation shall speak peace unto nations." So yes, bear in mind, this book was released in 1942. It's very poignant that one remembers that, because he's talking about how the BBC was used to talk about war, and of course it was used as propaganda in the war. And so that's what he means. Well, although clearly somebody has said that the BBC, "Nation shall speak peace unto nation," really. I think the BBC will continue to be propagandising people to the point that it's now sort of so bloody awful that one should never listen to it. So those who welcomed the railway saw it as more than a rapid and comfortable means of transport. They actually saw it as a factor in world peace. They did not foresee the armoured train. They didn't foresee that the railway would just be one more means for the rapid movement of aggressive armies. None of them foresaw that the more we are together, the nearer the nations are to each other in the means of their communications, the more chances there are of war. Any boy or girl who is in one of the large families knows that. Yet a poet of the early railway times, Charles Mackay, expressed the opinion of many serious people in one of the verses of a poem on the new railway. His sentiments are similar to those which radio first evoked. And then we get this poem. I'm not very good at reading poems. "Lay down your rails, ye nations, fair and wide. Yoke your full trains to steam's triumphant car. link town to town, and in these iron bands unite the strange and often embattled lands. Peace and improvement round each train shall soar, and knowledge light the ignorance of your men, joined in amity, shall wander long, that hate and power to lead their fathers wrong. Oh, I can't be bothered to read the rest of that. It's very difficult. I won't bore you with too much more. I'm boring myself here. In the beginning, those who were against the new thing had quite a body of opinion on their side. It was gathered from the commercial world, the squirearchy, the peerage, the political, economic and the medical world. The medical views were as funny as they were about anything. When any new invention is put forward, those for it and those against it can always find medical men to approve or condemn. Isn't that true? It's true today as it was in the past. The anti-railway group produced doctors who said that tunnels would be the most dangerous to public health, that they would produce colds, catarrhs and consumptions. The deafening noise, the gloom, the glare of the fire, the engine fire, would have a bad effect on the nerves. Rather, being moved through the air at a high speed... Oh, sorry, further, being moved through the air at a high speed would do grave injury to delicate lungs. In those with the high blood pressure, the movement of the train might produce apoplexy. The sudden plunging of a train into the darkness of a tunnel and the equally sudden rush into full daylight would cause great damage to eyesight. But the pro-railway group was of course able to produce equally eminent medical men to say just the opposite. They said that the speed and the swing of the train would equalise circulation, promote digestion, tranquillise the nerves and ensure good sleep. Well, one can fall asleep on a train very easily, as we know. The squirearchy hated the thing because it spoiled their views. It might spoil their sport by running alongside their preserves. How would any member, a county MP cried, like to have a railroad under his parlour window? That is why in some parts of the country the railway station of a particular town is a mile away from that town. The local landowner wouldn't allow the promoters to acquire rights over his land at any price. One section of the commercial world thought that the thing was unworkable and unsound. Another thought that instead of helping the industry, it would damage it by concentrating it into a few hands. Some country opponents thought it would have a disastrous effect in frightening animals and birds. One or two cases proved their contention. In 1830, the first railway, the Stockton and Darlington, opened in 1825, was indicated as a nuisance. On this very ground, certain portions of the line ran parallel with the road, and there had been many accidents through horses taking fright and throwing their riders, or bolting with a gig or phaeton and overturning it. Other opponents were certain economists, as unreliable as they are now. They held that the railway could not possibly pay. There would not be a sufficient large number of people willing to face the risk of such mode of travel. In the event, of course, the railway conquered all opposition, and soon there was no doubt as to whether it would pay. During the 30s and 40s, there was the same scramble to get in railways, as we've seen later with the new and popular projects and plans for new lines and new companies were issued by the score. But early railway travel cannot have been very pleasant. For some lines, the coach was brought in as a collaborator. Thus, if in 1838 you wanted to go from London to Birmingham, you had to break the journey at one point and take a coach. Sometimes that has not changed, has it not? Coach replacement service. Peter Pry, writing in the New Sporting magazine, shows that you went by train from Euston to Denby Hall, where the order was, "All change! All change!" On leaving the platform and descending the stairs to the yard, I was, he says, we stopped by a check taker just as though there was a theatre who, after taking my ticket and looking at the tickets of those who were booked through to Birmingham, to whom he gave large pink cards with numbers of the coaches that they were to be conveyed by, and other particulars inscribed thereon. We descended the long flight of steps, and a sudden turn disclosed a score of coaches and omnibuses, all standing under a covered building alongside the turnpike road below, with postboys and horses for carriages, porters to carry the luggage, policemen, inspectors, all waiting to forward the passengers to Birmingham. How extraordinary. See, it is very fascinating, this book. I love the way he writes, old Thomas Burke. So there we are, there's a little excerpt there of... And I went... Funny, I've got a little thing here saying when I bought it. When did I buy that? Does it say? 2011 I bought that book. It's all good, it's all good. Everything's good. Thank you very much for listening. Well, ladies and gentlemen, 20 minutes of sheer priceless... audio recording there, absolutely amazing, he says in his boisterous voice of being somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Anyway, the lovely Julia has now mounted herself on the sofa and is looking radiant, splendid and beautiful, and I shall go to her and give her some loving. So whilst I do that, I will permit you, gentle listener, to make yourself a nice hot beverage and perhaps have a slice of toast and a bit of marmalade. And until we talk again, look after yourselves, do your hair, clean your feet, clip your toenails, and have a lovely day. Ta-ta for now.